people believe that we're something else. They believe that this school is not good. They believe that we don't know how to work together. But we are going to feel good, we're going to feel safe, and we're going to do that together.
Welcome to the Generation Youth Podcast, where we ignite the future by empowering our youth. I'm James McLamb, your host, founder, and CEO of Generation Youth, and the author of the best-selling book, Tomorrow's Youth. Whether you're a parent, an educator, youth pastor, or coach, join us as we dive into the pressing issues facing our young people today. Together, we'll unlock the strategies, insights, and inspiration to elevate and equip our next generation. Stay with us, and let's make a difference, one youth at a time. Welcome to the Generation Youth Podcast. I am James McLamb, your host, and I'm here with a new friend of mine, Brenda. How are you doing, Brenda?
I'm doing great, James. Glad to be here.
I am so excited to be with you as well. We met very recently. We just have connected recently, and it was through a Friday morning devotional that mutual friends of ours that are publishers, the publishers of my book and some friends of yours, do every Friday morning, and you share some things there that sparked an interest, and I am excited to be able to have you share your message with the Generation Youth audience. But before we dive into that, our audience really would love for you to tell a little bit about yourself. They're getting tired of me talking all the time. They want to hear from our guests. So if you wouldn't mind, share a little bit about yourself with the Generation Youth community.
Sure. So I have been in education. I just recently retired. I've been in education for 2 decades. And through that process, I have held various positions. I started as a teaching assistant, and I worked my way all the way up to director of education. I currently serve Illinois Principals Association as a coach and a mentor for leaders across our state. So I do aspiring leaders and also current principals. And that's such an important job that I do for them. And I love talking with these new leaders and help them with their leadership styles and things that they're doing. And it's very rewarding for me. And I just wrote a book called Lead with 2 Rules, Feeling Good and Feeling Safe. It just published in February, and it's my mission and my passion to help bring home, school, and community together. This is a blueprint for how schools can really work together and making sure that everyone is feeling good and feeling safe.
Well, that's what really drove my interest of stuff is when I saw the title of that book, 2 Rules, and kind of dived into it. Share with us a little bit what those 2 rules are and why this was your passion. What drove you to do this?
Sure. So as a child, I had some challenges. And I experienced death for the very first time as a 3rd grade student. I had parents who were older, and my brother and sister are 17 and 16 years older than me. So my brother was already out of the home. My sister was still at home, but she was still, you know, she was gone a lot. She had her own business and things. And my mother received a phone call that her mother had been diagnosed with terminal cancer and that she didn't have long to live. As a 3rd grade child, I loved when my parents would tell me that we were going to Kentucky to visit my family. And so when we arrived, it wasn't what I expected. Seeing my grandmother, who was a very large woman, full of laughter, all swallowed up in a bed, all shriveled up with a big oxygen tank tent over her. That tells you how old I am. I went through that whole process of seeing her pass away, the funeral and all of that. I missed school for, I say, a week, maybe 10 days, I don't know. And got back to school and I took a math test and I failed it. And the teacher says, take it home and have your parent sign it and bring it back. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. My dad worked at General Motors, a pretty good job. We were a middle-class family. Everything was great. So I asked my mom to sign the paper. So she signed her name, but she didn't like the way it looked.
She erased it and she signed it again. Now, because it was going to the teacher, she wanted her name to be perfect. So she wrote it again and I said, "Mom, you've got to just be okay with it. I've got to walk to school. I got to go." I arrived at school. I placed the paper on my teacher's desk. There were lots of kids around her, so I didn't want to bother her. I was a very shy kid. As I turned and went back to my seat, my teacher grabbed that paper and raised it up and said, "Brenda, this looks like you signed this and not your mom." And I'm shaking my head, "No." And she's saying, "Out to the hallway." And she's like, "I'm calling home to talk to your mom." And I'm like, "Oh no, don't do that." She's thinking I'm admitting guilt that I've signed this paper. What she doesn't understand is that I don't want my mom to be embarrassed, because my mom learned how to write her name and she could write it beautifully. The problem is that I was hiding that my parents did not have an education. My parents did not know how to read or write or do any of those things, but my mom had just lost her mother and I didn't want her to feel embarrassed. So she got the other teacher. So now both classrooms are looking at me, thinking that I've done this horrific deed, which I did not. Luckily for me, my older sister wasn't home because my mom couldn't drive either, but our home wasn't very far from the school. My sister arrived at school and had a conversation with the teacher. I have no idea what she said. And my sister took me home. The teacher never said anything to me again, didn't talk about the situation, didn't talk about anything. And nobody at home did either. So from that day forward, I didn't feel good about school and I didn't feel safe.
Wow.
And I didn't feel that way until I got to high school, when I really found some teachers who really took an interest in me and really provided some extra supports. And as I went through my years, I saw different signs of the ways that kids didn't feel good and they didn't feel safe. And it stayed with me and I kept working on my plans and developed this system. And so I practiced it as a teacher and I practiced it as assistant principal and principal. So basically, this is what it is. When I became principal at a middle school, it was a very large middle school, 602 students, in a large unit district with a very diverse population. And they were known to have lots of fights, lots of disorder, not academically doing well. And it was my first day. The teachers didn't really know me. The students didn't really know me. Maybe a handful did, because, well, I guess the whole grade part of the grade did, because they'd had me before. So I asked the teachers to leave. And they all looked at me like I was crazy and nobody moved. I said, "No, teachers, it's okay. Really, I want you to leave." Finally, somebody does. So they leave.
Had you met with the teachers before then? Had you talked to the teachers at all before then?
Briefly. Not really. What had happened was, the principal had left at the last minute.
Uh-huh.
And so they moved me over to be the principal. I had only been in the district for a year. This was my second year in the district.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I decided that they were going to learn my two rules. So the teachers left and they were still hanging out in the hallway. They thought, "This woman is crazy. She doesn't know what she's doing." I can't blame them, you know?
Yeah.
But I raised my hand and I had the kids give me some eye contact, and some kids, they all started raising their hands, and then everybody had their hands up, and then I lowered them. I lowered my hand. And I said, "This is my signal for you guys to know that your eyes are on me, because I am going to speak. This is how we have a conversation. I'm not going to yell to get your attention. That's not how you have a conversation. I want to tell you that I trust you. I asked the teachers to leave. They don't trust me yet, but they will as we start to work together. And we are going to work on building trust with you so you can trust us, because you have to have a trusted adult in this building, and we're going to work to earn your trust. Now, I want to tell you, I only have two rules, and those rules are this. Everyone who walks through the doors of our school is going to feel good about being here, and they're going to feel safe. Now, how can we do that? We can do that by asking ourselves questions. Before you say anything, ask yourself, is this going to make me feel good? Is this going to make others feel good? Is this going to make me feel safe? Is this going to make others feel safe? Before you do anything, is this going to make you feel safe? Is this going to make others feel safe? We have to ask ourselves those questions. And if you say no to any of those questions, you have identified a problem in need of a solution. And you need to seek out a trusted adult who can help you with problem solving to figure out what's the best solution. Now, we all have the choice is power for us. We all have choices. So if we make the choice to be part of the problem, the solution is already in the handbook for you. There's consequences to every problem that we have. The same thing is in life. If I choose to get in my car and go out and break the speed limit, I made that choice. I may get a speeding ticket if the police officer pulls me over, or I may hit someone, cause an accident, or I could hurt someone. I could kill someone. I could kill myself. There's always consequences. But if I choose to drive correctly, I'm choosing safety and helping others feel good. There's always choice in everything that we do, and there's always consequences for everything that we do and say. So that is how we will work together to feel good and to feel safe in our school.
What? How did they react to that? I mean, you're walking in, you're brand new, and you're throwing out, oh, there's only two rules, and they're probably getting all excited. Oh, two rules. We had 198,000 with the last person. You know, we couldn't chew gum and talk, you know, in the classroom. And now she just wants two. And then you're telling them this, and I'm thinking my youngest is an eighth grader, so she's just about to get out of middle school. And I'm thinking of her classrooms over the last 3 years. The cognitive ability as that's changing during that transition time of middle school, they're probably not grasping this immediately. So what was their reaction to all this?
No, not immediately. So they're listening. They're listening and they're like looking at me. At first I thought, just like the teachers, this woman is crazy.
I can understand that. And the teachers are probably like, she has no idea what she's going to do. She'll be out of here in a month.
Yeah. But as I talked and I said, it's really that simple. If you just stop and you think before you say and before you do, and we're going to help you. And I gave those words to the kids, and they're looking at me. And a lot of the kids are like, you can see the wheels turning in their heads. They're like going, okay, yeah, all right. That's starting to make a little sense. Now, there was a portion of the kids who had been with me at the elementary school that I moved up with them. They had already heard this as fifth graders. So they already had experienced this, because my phrase is always, you can choose to be part of the problem or part of the solution. The choice is always yours to make. Make it a great day or not. The choice is yours. It's not mine. It's not your parents. It's not your friends. It's yours. It's always your choice. We talked a lot during this time about, I don't want to hear blame on anybody else. Nobody made that choice but you. And so there was a lot of accountability and a lot of wait time with kids. So a lot of the kids, when we left the gym, some of them would stop by and talk to me and say, I think that made sense. I think that made sense. And what we did every day was repeat. You can choose to be part of the problem or part of the solution. And we would say those phrases all the time. Now, when the kids would come to me with a discipline issue, I would sit them down in the office, and I had a little table. I would sit next to them and I would say, so were you part of the problem or part of the solution? And I would wait. I wait for them to answer. And then they would say, problem. Which rule did you break? Were you helping others feel good or not good? Helping them feel safe or not safe? And then I'd wait until they would answer. And then they would tell me. So why did you choose to do that? What would you do now? You know, we would walk through the stages of that. And eventually in the book, I have real conversations that I have with kids. There's examples. It's step by step on exactly the things that we did and exact conversations, examples. And I have so many more that I could give. And it's a process that we consistently did every day.
I'm thinking folks that are listening to us right there, they're like, okay, this is another one of these Pollyanna, you know, concepts, but they don't work. They don't really work. There's no, you know, they don't happen. So what were the results and how long did it take, you know, for the culture to change? We had a guest on last fall, a good friend of mine named Greg Burr, who is a principal up in Minnesota. And he says, culture is what you do every day. It's what you emphasize. And I can't remember what the third one is. I even taught a life class at my church based on family culture on that. But, you know, when you say repeat every day, it made me think about that because you were changing the culture. What you do every day, what you emphasize. And I can't remember the third one.
Consistency, compassion. And, you know, we did change in creating a better culture for our kids. It's not one more thing. And I know you asked me if I talked with the teachers before. I didn't. And this wasn't something that I said we were doing. It was what I was modeling as a leader of my expectation. So I close with, this is my expectation. This is my high expectation for all of us. This is how I expect us to be. People believe that we're something else. They believe that this school is not good. They believe that we don't know how to work together. But we are going to feel good. We're going to feel safe. And we're going to do that together because that's my expectation. I will never ask you to do more than what I will not do. We're doing this together.
So how long did it take for the culture of the school to change?
Less than 6 months.
Wow.
I started seeing changes with the kids. In the first year, we made great strides in academic performance, in reduction of discipline, and attendance. So those are three areas that you look at. We were able to, we did not have a gifted program in our school. The other middle school did. We were able to outperform them academically.
That's nice.
Yeah, that's nice. That's nice. And the environment was nice in our school. And people could notice it when they came in. It had a different feel about it. Now, I'm not going to tell you that we reached every single child. We didn't. You're going to have kids that you're not going to be able to reach because I'm going to tell you that unless you have home, school, and community working together, it's really hard to make all of those changes that you need because we cannot point the finger at one place and say that's where all the blame is because kids have influences at home, at school, and in the community. You have to take all those variables into consideration when you're looking at what's going on with a child. But we have to be accountable for what we do. And consistently, we worked with our kids and knowing that they could come to us if there was a problem. And I'm going to tell you that kids knew that they could come to me to the teachers, to the assistant principals. We had a resource officer. They could come to those people and tell them things. And they did. They did. They came and told us about things that prevented other kids from getting hurt. And, you know, they prevented some fights. They prevented lots of different things. And we saw that happen pretty quickly. It was like, honestly, they were trying to, I think, test us to see if we could be trusted and what we would do at the beginning. And that's why I say consistency and being clear and always making sure that you're saying and doing. Say what you mean. You know, walk the walk and talk the talk, you know.
Yeah.
When you've got to be there. You got
to
do it.
Yeah. This is reminding me of two things that we've tried to express here. One is, and I mentioned it beforehand, is we have been emphasizing through Generation Youth, and even myself before we started Generation Youth, when I was a teacher, I taught for almost a decade. And when I was in the classroom, I kept thinking, when did I start excelling as a student? When did I move from being shy and not extremely introverted, but reserved, may have been a better word to put it, to someone who wanted to be up front, wanted to be a leader, wanted to take chances, wanted to take risks, wanted to accomplish things, and was willing to do that? And I realized it was when two things happened. One is that I found a classroom and an organization in my school where I felt safe to be me. That I could finally not be someone else or, you know, have to fit in. I could just be my authentic self and build upon that. So I felt safe there. And two, that I belong, because there were others around me who were supportive. There were teachers who were supportive. It first started with teachers, and then it started with the classmates that, hey, we believe that you can do this, and we like what you're doing, and hey, we got you back, and you got our back. And I, you know, so when I felt safe and I could belong somewhere is when I started doing it. And then I thought too, and you and I discussed this briefly beforehand, is I felt like that's what draws kids to bad groups, to, you know, and I don't want to use the word gangs necessarily, because that's not a term that's used everywhere, but it's a term that maybe some of our audience understand. What draws kids to bad groups is because there they feel safe. This environment is allowing me to be something, and I can express it, whether it's the right expression of their life or not, you know, is debatable and questionable. But they also feel like they belong. You know, hey, these guys got my back. Someone is going to take care of me. And without that, they're just kind of wandering around and stuff. So that immediately when I saw this, I was like, gosh, that speaks to what we've been doing here.
And you're right. And I've listened to some of your shows, and you're right. And the demographics of the school that I was talking about, where I started as a principal of a middle school, I was an assistant principal at a middle school in a rural community. We had our issues as well, but a little bit different than the large unit district. The large unit district that I was in, we had three rival gangs.
Oh, wow.
That was a part of the demographics. Now, what I wanted to do was absolutely model what I'm telling people to do, is to build the trusting relationships. So what's the very first thing that I'm going to do? Build the trusting relationships with all of my kids and all of my families. I went out to the homes. I went out in the community. I wanted relationships with everyone. I brought in the gang members. I knew which groups they were very quickly. It's not hard to figure them out. It really isn't. And it's tough. It's really tough. So this is what my kids would tell me in these gangs. Here's the situation. Why they get involved with a gang is this. When they leave their home, if they step out, they're all alone if they don't belong to any gang. They're on their own. But if they belong to one of the groups, they know that all those people in that group has their back, and that makes them feel safe.
Exactly. They feel like they belong. I am a part of something now.
Yes.
And, you know, that's the same way that, like, athletics can give people that place where they feel safe to belong. Student organizations that are really organized and give you an opportunity to participate in things outside of school. That's why they're so popular. Or the arts, you know, I think band's a great example of that. That gives people a place to belong and feel safe.
Yes, it absolutely is. And, you know, and one of the things that I think is important with kids also is to go ahead and tell them about your life. Go ahead and tell them about your hardships, because sometimes they look at you and they think that you've not experienced anything and they don't know what they don't know about you. So go ahead and tell them. You know, I'm a white female in a very diverse group of kids. So they assume that my life pretty easy. It's not been easy. Not been easy for me. That's an assumption. So one of the things that I've done in my career in education is to show to let kids see how their biases are about other people. So I brought in a man that I knew. He was about 6'5", I think is how tall he was. An African-American male came in to speak about his career. The kids all guessed that he was a professional basketball player or had played basketball. Wrong. He didn't even know how to play basketball. He didn't like basketball. He hated everything about basketball. That was a biased judgment. You know, he was an accountant. You know, he'd never played basketball before. Had nothing to do with basketball. You know, and the guy that came in that was the basketball player, he was about 5'9". You know? And he was a white guy. You know, maybe I set them up a little bit, but, you know, you can't use your judgment of skin color and height and, you know, those kinds of things. You just can't do that. You can't judge people by their cover.
Yeah.
And you know what? So ironic about that is this, you know, teaching those kids that kind of lesson, I was able to teach the group of kids in 2010. There was a horrific crash that I was involved in with a semi, and I got the blunt of the whole accident. I was airlifted and I looked a mess. Most of my teeth were knocked out and, I don't know, 50 stitches in my, you know, I looked a mess.
Wow.
I was able to go back to the school pretty quickly. Because I wanted to show my kids, because I was a trusted adult. I wanted to show them I was okay, because there was a rumor that I had died. And, so I went in and I told them, hey, does this change who I am? Mm-mm. Nope, I'm the same person, but I don't look very good right now. But the cover really doesn't change who I am. It just looks a little rough right now, but I am still the same person and going to be. But I had a traumatic brain injury, so it did change a little bit of the things I could say or do at the time. Your brain takes 5 years to heal. But I could teach them a lesson about things. And that's important. One of the lessons that the kids taught me when I was a teacher, I had a parent who did not want to have their special needs child in a special education classroom. She requested to have him in my classroom. He was wonderful, just the best addition to my class. And we formed all these relationships, and he was one of the first people that sent me a card after my accident. I hadn't had him for a long time, but I was able to move on and see him at the middle school. And I saw that same group of kids let that young man be part of the basketball team. And they let him come out on the basketball floor and shoot a basket and play. And so did the opposing team. That group of kids made me so proud with knowing that they knew what it was like to help make someone feel good and to feel safe about just being him. Now, that was my rural community. I wanted to see what that looked like in my large unit district, and it happened. In my large unit district, I had a special needs boy named Johnny. And Johnny wanted to play basketball so bad. But Johnny was, you know, had so many things that was going on for him. He didn't have a lot of support from home, but I made some adjustments. So I asked Mom if we could have his medication delivered to the school, and it was. So we gave him his medication at school. Check. Got that taken care of. So that settled some things down. And then we helped Johnny with a chart so that he could earn the right to be able to go down and practice basketball. And there was an issue with transportation, so I became his transportation. So when he earned that right, then he would stay and then I would take him home. Now he wanted really bad to play in a game. And so he finally earned the right to play in a basketball game. And the coach and these boys, they worked with Johnny. And I went to the game. I took Johnny to the game because I didn't let him ride the bus. I didn't want to take a chance. And they let him out on the floor. And they cheered for him. And they let Johnny have the ball to make a basket.
That goes back to those two things. Did it make him feel good? And did he feel safe? And the results of it. So I really love this concept, mainly because of its simplicity, that it's easy to understand. It's easy to grasp. I think that educators, you know, especially first-year educators, if they could concentrate on that aspect of building the culture in their classroom and what's going on. My daughter is in her second year of teaching, and she has, she didn't know anything about this, but I know that she's created this environment because we're starting to see in year two some of her students talk about, you know, how they have felt in the classroom, how they felt attracted to the program that she's created, and now several of them are wanting to, after 2 years, are wanting to go into teaching the same discipline that she teaches because of her. So that's creating that environment. So many times I feel like we don't have time to do this. Parents don't have time to do this as well. So I appreciate this so much. Where can our audience connect with you more and find out more about what you do and the services that you provide and those types of things? Because I'm hoping that they've stayed with us this long, they're going to want to know more.
Well, they can go to my website, brendayoho.com. They can email me, yohobren@gmail.com. And they can definitely buy the book, Lead with Two Rules, Feeling Good and Feeling Safe. I'm on Twitter @BrendaYoho. I'm on Instagram, Brenda Yoho.
Elon Musk is going to get mad at us for saying Twitter now. We're going to call it X.
I know, but you know, that's still what we have to call it. I can't hardly call it X.
Because what do you do? Do you tweet or do you X? I don't even know what we do anymore. So.
I know. But, you know, I really love for people to, you know, I'm not in the business for making money. I'm in the business for making a difference. So if you really reach out to me, I will send you a copy. I really will. I've been trying to give copies to libraries. So if you're in, you know, if your district or your area needs a copy of my book in the library, just let me know. I'll send it to your library. I want people to have it. I want people to do it because it is simplistic, but we have too much violence going on. We have too much bullying going on. I'm a bullying expert. I know things about bullying. We just can't have this. We've got to get back to feeling good and feeling safe. And we just got to.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I've enjoyed our conversation and I feel some synergy. I feel like we'll be doing some more conversations going forward. And audience, thank you for sticking with us. Listen, if you stayed with us for 35, 40 minutes, you found some value in what you're listening to. So we would love for you to comment on this, share. More than comment and like it, share it, because you know someone who needs this message. And if you're listening to me now, you've obviously found value. Share it with someone that you know that needs this message. All the links for Brenda are going to be in the show notes. So if you're watching, look down If you're listening, just go to your podcast app and you'll find all that information there as well. So thank you again, Brenda, for your time today. I really am excited to be able to share this with our audience.
Thank you.
And audience, thank you again. And we'll see you again very soon on the Generation Youth Podcast.
And there you have it, another impactful episode of the Generation Youth Podcast. To all of our listeners out there, remember to hit that subscribe button on your preferred podcast platform so you can never miss an episode. Want to be a part of the Generation Youth community? Follow us on all of our social media platforms. We'll keep you connected with all of our upcoming episodes and inspiring initiatives. You're not just a listener here. You're a catalyst for change. Together, we're building a future filled with promise, potential, and endless possibilities. This journey is just starting, so keep tuning in, keep growing, and let's continue uplifting our youth one episode at a time. Thank you for joining us today, and until next time, let's keep sparking inspiration and igniting the future.